This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The deadline is approaching to register to vote in West Virginia's upcoming primary election. Dave Mistich has more.
Tuesday, April 17th marks the final day to register to vote in the May 8th primary. Secretary of State Elections Division Director Deke Kersey outlines the way residents can register.
You can register to vote in person at your county clerk's office. You can send in a voter registration application, and then you'll have to go through a process of verifying your address, which includes showing an ID, an acceptable form of ID, on election day. You can also go online.
Data from the Secretary of State's office show more than 1.2 million West Virginians were registered to vote by the end of last month. Nearly 43% are listed as Democrats, and nearly 32% are registered Republicans. Roughly 22% of registered voters in the state have no party affiliation, while the Mountain and Libertarian parties each account for less than 1%. The May 8th primary marks the first statewide election under a new voter identification law, which went into effect at the beginning of the year. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown.
The number of recovery homes and sober living facilities in West Virginia has grown as addicts seek help staying clean. One recovery home director wants his program and others to join a national organization to help share best practices and ensure credibility. Molly Bourne reports.
Sober living homes generally provide a group home setting and require residents to follow certain rules. Recovery housing can go a step further by offering certain services and programs on site. Both are forms of transitional housing for people with addictions. Recovery Point is a long-term residential recovery program based in Huntington with three other locations. Executive Director Matt Boggs is working to create a state chapter of the National Alliance for Recovery Residences.
We've seen an influx of recovery housing and sober living homes pop up in the community, and a bunch of different recovery providers in the Huntington community came together and said, we need to do something to provide assistance to these recovery homes, but also get a good grasp and a handle on how many there are, how many beds are offered, and make sure that we're communicating effectively across the community.
It's not clear how many of these facilities exist in West Virginia. The State Department of Health and Human Services doesn't keep a tally, and the agency doesn't regulate this type of transitional housing. Boggs estimates there are likely at least 500 recovery beds in West Virginia, including the 350 his program offers. He bases that on his knowledge of programs that get dollars from the West Virginia Bureau for Behavioral Health and Health Facilities.
But we don't have an accurate count for ones in addition to those that are not funded by the state, but are just simply folks who are, you know, wanting to provide recovery housing for people in recovery.
Anonymity and a lack of oversight have led to problems elsewhere. In South Florida, authorities have accused some sober living home providers of illegal patient brokering. One example of this is when a provider refers a resident to an outside service and gets a kickback for it. In Pennsylvania, at least one lawmaker who received complaints about unscrupulous sober living homes in her district called for minimum requirements, like background checks, for providers. Boggs thinks a peer-led network rather than regulation from a governing body is the best approach.
It's just like any other sector. You've always got bad actors. And so I think that if we work together, we can bring credibility to recovery housing, but also some peace of mind to a mother and father who are trying to seek a recovery house for one of their loved ones, to where they can go to the West Virginia Alliance of Recovery Residences website and see who the credible providers are in the state.
The forthcoming West Virginia chapter is currently seeking nonprofit status and state funding to hire a director. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne.
Sunday, April 15th. Temple Bethel and the Beckley community will gather at WVU Tech to remember those who were killed during the Holocaust. Alderson Broaddus journalism student Laura Alston reports the annual event was inspired by the story of the late Max Lewin, who moved to Beckley after escaping the horrors of the Holocaust himself.
Yehul Lewin, Sarah Lewin, Joseph Lewin, Leah Lewin,
Every spring since 1991, Temple Bethel and the Beckley community gather to remember the victims of the Holocaust with the annual Yom HaShoah, or Holocaust Remembrance Day. This particular gathering was inspired by the late Max Lewin, Beckley's only Holocaust survivor who came to southern West Virginia in 1946. Many residents were not aware of the tragedies Lewin faced until he revealed the extent of his suffering to his synagogue family. Temple Beth-El members Ruth Ann Ornstein, Tom Sofer, and Dr. Joe Golden remember that day in 1990.
I'm not sure why he decided to share it. It kind of came out of the middle of nowhere in my way of thinking about it. And it's like something inside of him made it come out.
We were using student rabbis from Hebrew Union College at the time. And we had a Havdalah ceremony, and this was when the Sabbath ends and the new week begins.
At the time, we used to have gatherings in a person's home, a member of the congregation. And the ceremony involved a little bit of singing, a little bit of smelling the fragrances of spices.
After the things develops and it's over, the rabbis usually ask if we would share a story or like what we would be thankful for the week.
And so we basically described certain things, were mostly mundane. But when it came Max's turn, he started telling about his Holocaust experience. He just started opening up and telling his memories.
And we all just kind of take a step back and take a big deep breath, and it got real quiet, and we listened.
Yeah, and I don't know why that was the time, but I guess it was God's way of saying it's time to let it out and deal with it. So that is what he did, and it was heart-wrenching.
And all of us were pretty much taken off our guard because we were expecting something mild, and here was something very deep, serious, life-changing for Max, and that he had previously kept quiet about this, but somehow in that particular setting, at that particular moment, he wanted to tell us his experience and his story.
We really didn't know what was going on in this little guy's head, but, you know, it was amazing, you know, that he could open up to us. And he began to get better. He began to heal after that.
And I think from that point on, Max was more open in talking to people about his experience being in concentration camps and losing many members of his family.
Beginning in late 1990, Max began to make plans to memorialize his parents, two sisters, a brother, and his wife, who all perished in the Holocaust. The first of these was an endowed scholarship for Woodrow Wilson High School students through the Beckley Area Foundation, and a tangible reminder with the Memorial Bell Tower at Mountain State University in 1994. Former MSU Executive Vice President Jim Solosky remembers that this memorial provided catharsis for Lewin.
Max would come and just sit on those benches and look at the plaque. And I think it gave him some comfort knowing what he had done, and that he had left this everlasting memorial to his family.
The annual Holocaust Remembrance Day also allowed the community to honor and remember the dead. This year's commemoration will feature a 20-minute interview with Max Lewin that was recorded in 1996. This never-before-published video gives a personal glimpse of the horrors that Max encountered, including the fact that he was the only Holocaust survivor of his hometown, Lipnitsky, Poland.
And all the people, everybody from my hometown, my cousins and everything, I don't know how, I can never understand why, but it took me. But I was the only one, out of the only people, I was in all over Germany and after the war in Israel, nobody. Nobody, but I was the only one in the area left, in my town, in my area, people I know, I knew. And that was the end of it.
Temple Beth-El Secretary Dr. Joe Golden describes the powerful emotions that Max displayed in this video.
And in the interview, you could see Max's voice get broken at times, he get more emotional, and you need to empathize with that because he's remembering the horrors that he and his family experienced and what he saw around him.
The annual Beckley Holocaust Remembrance Day will be Sunday, April 15th at 1 p.m. in Carter Hall on the campus of West Virginia University Institute of Technology. Beckley Mayor Rob Rappold explains the importance of this gathering.
We need to always have that in our mind and to make sure that that sort of atrocity and inhumane activity never happens again in our lifetime or lifetimes to come.
In Beckley, I'm Laura Austin.
We've posted more information on the annual Beckley Holocaust Remembrance Day on April 15th. That's at wvpublic.org. This week's Mountain Stage Song of the Week is from Kenny White, a highly regarded session musician, producer, songwriter, and pianist. Here he is performing The Other Shore from his latest album, Long List of Priors.
There's a time, early evening, the city shows its mercy. Lines are cast through the river glass as the sun sinks into Jersey. On my left, the lady glints, the copper torch of liberty. On my right, the faded prints of where you stood so near to me. Through window panes as thin as prayer, you can hear the peals of thunder. And I've spent hours sitting there, confusing love with home. Today my longing knows no limits. I'm held by what I cannot hold. Stay with me for just these few more minutes and keep me from
performing The Other Shore live on Mountain Stage. To hear this and more, tune in tonight and tomorrow night at 8, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Molly Bourne, Jessica Lilly, Carol Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, and Roxy Todd. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.